Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, Magic Johnson was on Twitter again today.
Oh boy.
And
I avoided this, so I'm going into this blind, which may help the segment, but not my
All right, so Magic felt like ranking things.
Oh, and, okay.
And so he started with, in honor of my 60th birthday tomorrow, I put together a few lists of top favorites. First up, top 60 films. Well, no, we won't do films because that one doesn't, this kind of breaks the rule. Top 60 athletes turned entrepreneurs. Are you ready?
Okay.
See if you pick up on a trend here. Aaron Rodgers, Alex Rodriguez, Arnold Palmer, Billie Jean King,
Brett alphabetical Favre. Order.
All right, you ready to hear his top 60 places to travel?
Are they in alphabetical order?
Maybe. Number one is Amsterdam. Number two is Anguilla. Number three, Antibes, I guess. Athens, Auckland, the Bahamas, Barbados, Barcelona, Berlin.
How many? So does he do 60 of these?
He goes all the way to 60. Number 60 on his top 60 places to travel is Zurich.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Oh, Magic. I don't like this, man. Like,
you have
that
to.
That was my dude growing up. That was my dude growing up, man. Like,
I mean,
I get it.
We've reached a point here, though, where, like, we should be used to making fun. Like, at least this, right? This isn't harmful. Like, this isn't. It was way tougher to talk about Magic Johnson, the executive, because he was, like, legitimately doing harm to the franchise that we really care about. But with this, like, he's just bad at Twitter. He's not good at this.
I saw somebody say that Magic Johnson tweets like he's the only person with the TV, and he's, like, telling everybody else what happened.
Yeah.
And when they framed it in that way, I was like, oh my God, that's perfect.
Cause, yeah.
Like, you know, his tweets are so obvious, right?
Yeah.
That, but that's the thing. It's like he's explaining to everyone, like, look, I saw this thing on TV. We're like, we know, Magic. We saw it too. But he's explaining it like we don't have a TV.
Remember that old game that they used to play in, like, elementary school where you had to talk somebody through making a PB&J and they had to listen to every, like, they had to follow every step absolutely the way that you worded it, right? And what it meant was, like, if you skip steps, they would just screw up the sandwich. Okay. So, like, he tweets as if, like, if he misses a step, if he says anything that is not completely obvious, you're going to screw up your PB&J.
Got it. I never played that game when I was a kid, but that's a good analogy, too.
he keeps going, though. His top 60 TV shows, 21 Jump Street, The Three Stooges, A Different World, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, The Andy Griffith Show, The Arsenio Hall Show, Ballers, The Beverly Hillbillies, and then he finishes up with, come on, 60, What's Happening?
Yeah.
He has The Wire 58th.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
that's because it starts with W.
But what's funny is that, like, so when he did movies earlier, he did The Godfather was number one. So he doesn't always follow the alphabetical rule. So
interesting.
He hates The Wire. How does that make you feel now?
Yeah, I know. I don't like that.
Oh, Magic. And then there's that Magic's tweet account that fired off the top 60 numbers and just listed 1, 2. all right, today's show, we are not going to talk about Magic Johnson's Twitter account for the whole show. I had to intro with that. It's just too incredible, and it's August, so we have the opportunity to do that. Today's show, we are actually going to review or preview Danny Green's season. So we'll start by reviewing the season that he came off of, as we always do. We will then throw to the things that he needs to do individually, or he could, you know, at this stage of his career, improvement is kind of a stretch, right? But, you know, things that he could do individually, maybe maintain from last year individually, and then finally how he fits in the team construct. So what we're going to do, I'm going to take a quick second here, actually. Well, Yeah, I'm going to take a quick second. We'll just make segment two the review of his last year and then some of the individual talk. Because really, what you know, with Danny Green, the type of player that he is, and I think you would agree on this, Pete, that the type of player he is, everything is about team construct.
Mm-hmm.
Like very everything so. About this guy, he's a role player. He understands that he's a role player, and he does whatever he can to fulfill that role. And you know, it's kind of funny. You and I talked just yesterday about Kyle Kuzma. He could learn something from Danny Green here. So let's take a quick second. When we come back, we're going to talk about a season that Brian Windhorst thought was a down year for Danny Green last year. We'll talk about that, and then and talk about some of the things that he needs to do individually if he wants to be a success on the Lakers. All right, so Danny Green is coming off of a 2018-2019 season. He won a championship with the Toronto Raptors. He played 80 games, which is going to be really important for the Lakers, the number of games he's able to participate in. He averaged 10.3 points, 4 rebounds a game, an assist and a half, shot 46.5% from the field, 45.5% from three, and 84% from the free throw line, with an effective field goal rate, a field goal percentage of 62.2%. That's not a bad season at all.
No, not at all.
If he just replicates that season, he's a slam dunk signing, right?
Yeah, and honestly, I'm not expecting him to reach those levels, like that 45.5% from three on, you know, as many attempts per game as he was taking. Like, to me, like
attempts a game.
Yeah, if he's in that 39 to 41% range, I mean, that's totally great. And he's somebody where from watching a lot of his tape for the last video that I did, was he's somebody that really thrives off of certain types of threes. And I don't think it's a coincidence that his 3-point percentage went up going from San Antonio to Toronto. Mm-hmm. Really, if his feet are set, he's just an incredible shooter.
Yeah.
And so you want to get him as many of those kick out type of threes. And that's more conducive to superstars, right? Players who draw second and third defenders, kick it out to you, your feet are set, you're open. San Antonio is more of a have the system run this play and this will create an open shot for you because you ran this play correctly. But a lot of times that means you have to hit shots on the move. Mm-hmm. Green can come off of screens, but he's okay at that. And he has a lot of gravity, right, mm-hmm. in that respect. And the Lakers will capitalize on that. But really, he's going to make his money knocking down those spot-up threes from a LeBron kickout, from an Anthony Davis kickout, guys like that, rather than running a play that gets him open off of a double screen or something like that.
Yeah, every so often I like the idea of running a shooter off screens, especially depending on who is guarding that shooter. Like if the opposing team, if they have like Harden on Green or something like that in a switch, I don't mind running Danny around a few screens just to get Harden to have to pay a little bit of attention on offense. But for the most part, I've always liked my shooters just to, hey, camp out over there for a bit, move and float as the game dictates. But for the most part, have your feet set and be ready to catch and shoot as soon as you catch that ball. And go ahead.
No, well, and we're going to need Danny Green to come off of screens, right? Like that's, to me, that's like a fundamental component of running a half court play is somebody has to come off of a screen and be a threat. And then different actions can flow off of that. You can do other things, but that is probably the central component. So guys like Klay Thompson and other shooters who can come off of screens, a lot of times they're the primary option on a set play. Even if they're not the best player on the team, they're kind of the guys that help all of it work. So we're definitely going to need Danny Green to do that and be able to be good enough at it to where he still attracts that type of attention where defenders are going to lock and trail on his hip and fight over screens. And that's going to open up all of the pressure to the basket that the Lakers can put with LeBron, AD, Boogie, and all that.
Is Danny Green the best shooter the Lakers have ever employed?
Oh, boy.
Off the top of the head, off the top of my head, I would probably say yes.
Glenn Rice over him.
Yeah,
I'd say Glenn Rice would be, and like Rice had to kind of adjust to a different role, being a third option with the Lakers as opposed to the first option that was with Charlotte and Miami.
Glenn Rice,
yeah, no, absolutely. But it's also like, what do you are you just talking like open catch and shoot threes? Because even I'd put Kobe up there too, right? Not he wasn't a catch and shoot 3-point threat like the other guys, but the ability to make shots as a shooter, right? Create a shot. Can you hit it off of a one dribble pull up? You know, Kobe's got the advantage over Danny Green on that, right? Can you do it? You know, can you come off of a screen? Can you come off of a pick and roll and do that? Can you shoot a fadeaway in the post, right? Like, there's a more versatile shot making. But in terms of like, can you knock down an open three? Yeah, I mean, Danny Green's right up there.
Yeah, I just can't. I can't wait. I've always loved the type of player. And there's a lot of them now. I mean, it was basically half the Golden State roster over the last few years. But those guys who the ball rotates over, and you can just see it in the opposing defense's faces when the ball rotates over and that player catches the ball, and they're just like, fuck, dang it.
Right. Yes.
This is not. That's just, you got to hope that person misses that. You got to hope that guy misses. And you know, with somebody like Danny Green, especially in that kind of a situation, I believe it was more often than not that he actually made those wide open three pointers.
He shot like 51.3% on wide open threes, which is just unbelievable.
You know how insane that is? That's incredible. Like, just think of that. In any situation whatsoever, like, it was more often than not that he would make a three-pointer than he would miss it in a game setting. Like, it's one thing when you're just kind of shooting around and you're working on your shot and you hope to go, like, you know, 6 or 7 out of 10 from three-point range while you're in those shooting drills and stuff. But for him to do something like that in a game is just unbelievable. And I can't wait for that. Like, I've said it all these times. I'm a shooting nerd. And the idea that the Lakers are finally going to employ somebody who, you know, there are going to be sets where LeBron and Anthony Davis are in some kind of a two-man game. The defense has to now choose between helping off of Danny Green or letting Anthony Davis score, right? Or LeBron James score. And in those moments where they say, okay, well, we can't let LeBron or Anthony Davis beat us, we'll see how Danny Green does, and that ball kicks over to him, you're going to see a lot of really frustrated defenders, because the last thing any defender wants to do is let their or have their guy score, right? It goes back to the very instincts of any defensive player ever to have played basketball, is if your guy scores, you failed on defense. Now, you know, it's an overly simplistic way to look at it, and there are some situations where a coach will still say to a player, hey, don't worry about it, that's the shot we want to give up, and all that stuff. But still, if a player is guarding Danny Green and their coach tells that player to help off of Danny Green, they probably aren't going to be thrilled about doing that. And then, you know, when Danny Green makes that three-pointer, it's going to be incredible. Like, that watching the look on that defender's face who was told, hey, you got to go in, pinch in on Anthony Davis, that's going to be – I can't wait for all of that. I really can't.
It's great to have these pick-your-poison type of scenarios that you're talking about, right, where, you know, if you shoot 50% from three-point range, it's like shooting 75% from two-point range, right, in terms of how many points you're scoring. That's freaking crazy. And and that, like – I also think that there is a psychological component, and I saw this a lot last season, where, you know, LeBron would create an open shot for somebody, and then they'd miss that open three.
Yeah.
And there's just this, like, deflating effect to it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you make that shot, like, to me, like, those are worth – there are certain type of shots that are worth more than the points that they score on that play, right? Like, you bury that corner three, the crowd – and you can feel the crowd's anticipation, anticipation that they're going to knock that down. And when they actually do make it, the crowd explodes, right? We all know those moments as fans. And those are your 10-2 runs, your 14-4 type of runs, where – those are really where games are decided.
Yeah.
And I see a lot more of those types of runs this year from the Lakers, in large part because of the shooting ability that not just Danny Green, but other guys bring, but Green being at the forefront of that.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick second here. When we come back, we're going to talk about Green in the fold as a Laker now, and what he can do for the Lakers team wide. And, you know, I've alluded already to Kyle Kuzma here, but you know, Green being it's kind of too bad. The Lakers now have Phil Handy, who is a player development guy. They finally hired a shooting coach in Mike Penberthy now that they've gotten rid of their young guys. And now you employ a guy like Danny Green, who has perfected his craft about as well as just about anybody who has ever played, right? And you know, it would have been great to see, you know, younger guys learn from that. Kyle Kuzma is still in that spot. And mm-hmm. and one of the things that we're going to talk about here in a bit is the impact Danny Green might have, not just on the court, but across the entire roster. So hang tight. We'll be back here in a bit. Remember back when we would be playing some whatever organized sport, right? For both of us, we both played basketball competitively, right? Mm-hmm. And remember in conditioning seasons, you'd have to get out and run like a mile or something like that, or you'd have to go out and run your sprints. And there was always that one guy who just ran those things way too damn fast. Right. It's like we had a few of those guys and I remember just like yelling at them from time to time, like, go join cross country. Like, you're much better at running than playing basketball. Go do that. And what, Coach was thrilled to hear me yell that.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I bet your team captain.
But, you know, that kind of a pace setter. Who you know, really forces everybody else, pushes everybody else to be better around them at something important, right? And I use conditioning as an example here, but the Lakers last year didn't have that kind of a pace setter from three-point range, right? Hmm.
It does have a contagious quality to it.
It does. If you have, so at the position that Danny Green plays, right, the Lakers, let's just say somehow or another, Danny Green made his way to the Lakers last year, right? And he was put as a shooting guard slash small forward in some situations. And the guys who were competing to play in that spot were Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Reggie Bullock, you know, et cetera. And if Danny Green is out there knocking down 51% of his wide open three pointers, those other guys aren't going to get on the court. And if it takes, you know, coming close to what Green was shooting last year to get onto the court, well, that's going to make those guys better, right? And that's the contagious aspect of this, that pace setting ability to say, all right, if you want some of these minutes, you're going to have to take them from me by shooting something close to how I shoot. And just having somebody who the team can trust to go out there and knock down wide open jumpers, like, that's going to have a hopefully a trickle down effect throughout the entire roster. Would you roll with that as a theory?
No, I think there's a lot of truth to that. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of its own place of having number one option, number two option, et cetera, right? Yeah. You're gonna put Danny Green in positions like you can as a coach. I went over this in that video, that creator, shooter, and dominant big video, where, like, you want Danny Green on the weak side a lot of times. You got some amazing two-man game happening between LeBron and Anthony Davis, and we're all excited about the potential of that. Well, how do you use Danny Green's ability to complement that? And that's one of the great things about Danny Green, is that what he does well, like, we've been all positive and we've only talked about offense so far. We've only spoken about his shooting.
Yeah.
And there's more elements to his game, and it's not all good with Danny Green, right? He's got his weaknesses.
He's not a max player.
Right. He's never played 30 minutes per game in his career, which I thought was really interesting. He's a guy who will go 8 for 10 one day and then go 1 for 7 the next. Like, his 45% it's rarely like goes 3 for 7 every night type of guy, right? So there's inconsistencies there. But having just that threat and having that guy, like, God, it's all over the tape last season of help defenders just having one extra step closer toward LeBron, right? And that's part of not having a second star, but also the outside shooting, right? It was the types of players that the Lakers signed. And so, yeah, if it's Danny Green in that spot, then maybe it's, you know, maybe it's Avery Bradley in the corner and Bradley's actually pretty good in the corners, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, you're not asking him to hit the skip pass, but on that swing type of action, or, you know, maybe you got Quinn Cook there. You're able to put guys in these optimal positions as shooters when you have that number one guy who can run off of screens and at least be respected, yeah, even if he's not great at it. You can put other shooters, because that's basically the construction of this team, right? Is two superstars and shooters around them, and hopefully we could play some defense. That's actually, we need to talk about Danny Green's defense too. Yeah. I'll let you lead us into that, but you know, he helps slot guys in more appropriate places on the court.
Yeah, I just, it's the kind of signing that, you know, it was tough because the timing of signing Danny Green came right after you found out the Lakers weren't getting Kawhi Leonard, right? And as a result, it's just kind of like, you know, you have a nice slice of pineapple, bacon, ham, and jalapeno pizza sitting right there, and you see it, you're walking across the room to go get it, and then somebody swoops it, and then there's just like a slice of just regular pepperoni. It's like, yeah, it's still like a solid pizza, but it's not like the best.
Nobody's like coming in to slice you, to snag your friggin' pineapple pizza. It might as well have your name written on it in pineapples, like little pineapple bits saying Anthony on it. No one's doing that. It was a solid analogy until you went there.
But he was a really good signing given the situation, and you know, we've talked about a ton about his offense and stuff, but the defensive end is something, you know, he's so good as a shooter that the defense kind of goes ignored. It's a weird thing that we do where really good shooters aren't allowed to be really good at anything else, or like the other things that they do don't go noticed as much, don't get noticed as much. Like Klay Thompson for a really long time was underrated as a defender. He might be a little overrated at this point.
Sure.
But you know, for a really long time, nobody quite recognized the value he brought on the other end of the court. I think Danny Green is kind of in that spot too, where he does bring some stuff on the defensive end. And he's already said that, you know, in conversations he's had with Frank Vogel, he's focused on the defensive end. Like, that's where he's really looking to make an impact. So, Pete, I guess I'll ask you, like, what kind of an impact do you think he can make as a defender?
I think, let's put Anthony Davis aside, because he is a defensive player of the year caliber defender. Aside from AD, Danny Green is our most important player defensively. Mm-hmm. He's somebody who really prides himself on the communication aspect, along with being a very good wing defender, which is something that the Lakers have a dearth of on this team. I'd argue that they need one more wing guy. This is one of the reasons, you know, we're kind of lighting a candle for Andre Iguodala, right? That we could have one more guy.
You cowards.
Yes, exactly. and so Green is a very good wing defender who's capable of chasing guys off of screens, but also staying in front of them, using his body, just really fundamentally sound. I think he's 32 years old. I think he's kind of a young 32 in that it took him a couple of years to get minutes in the league. Like I said, he's never played 30 plus minutes. This is not a guy with a ton of mileage, even though he's been on high level playoff teams for pretty much his entire career. That's valuable too, by the way.
Absolutely.
So his ability he's the leader of the perimeter defense on this team. One of the questions I'm dying to ask Vogel once we get back at it is what Vogel's strategy on the perimeter is. Is this going to be a team where they really want ball pressure? Because this is something that Avery Bradley, there's a lot of discussion on whether or not he can do that too. But one thing Bradley is good at is that ball pressure aspect of it. Are you going to ask Danny Green to do that too? Are you going to put extra pressure on the perimeter and be like, yo, if you want to attack this, we got Anthony Davis waiting in the paint for you, right? Or like, how is that going to work? How are they going to construct the defense? But like, Danny Green is a guy where if he were to get hurt, it would hurt this particular team more than it might on another team that had more wings on it, had more wing defenders on it. He brings something that nobody else on the team really does at a high level. Like, there are a couple of other decent perimeter defenders on the team, but nobody with his size. And so I think that's something that's going to be really important going forward.
Yeah, I completely agree. I would like – it's for that reason that – Iguodala is even more important, because the idea of one player carrying the burden for anything on a team,
it's a little bit scary, right?
Like, we've just gone through this with 2 years of Lonzo Ball carrying the burden of the point guard responsibilities, right? With Tyler Ennis and Rajon Rondo behind him, and you know, while the guys who were behind Green in this respect are not nearly as incapable as the guys who were behind Lonzo Ball, not only is it from a, not only am I nervous from the standpoint of like, if he gets hurt, the Lakers are screwed, but also when you carry such a large burden of this kind of a responsibility, the wing defense especially, like that's a great way to overwork a player. And even if he doesn't get hurt, the, you know, if you overwork a shooter, it doesn't take much to throw a shooter off of their rhythm, especially a, right, a 3-point shooter. And for a team that's relying so heavily on Danny Green to be as proficient a shooter as he was, you know, close to what he was last year, even if it's a minor step back, they still need to, they still need him to be, you know, at least 40 and up from deep, and they still need him to be like 46 and up when he's wide open. Like, you still need a really damn good shooter there, and if you're asking this guy to carry that kind of a burden as a wing defender and also be that great of a shooter, that's where I'm starting to get a little nervous for, are you asking too much of Danny Green? And yeah, that's where Memphis, we're looking at you guys.
That's right.
Yeah,
we could really use that. I'm really curious to see what this team looks like after the trade deadline. They don't have much in the way of picks to trade. I'm not sure they can legally trade any of their picks. Right?
They can.
I don't think they can. And you've got Kuzma is a well-regarded young guy. Most of this team is vets or guys that you wouldn't dream of trading: LeBron, Anthony Davis, etc. So
Caruso.
It's going to be right. Yeah, well, actually, I would like us to start talking about Caruso as a prospect. Like,
yeah.
I'm telling you, man, his tape the last 15 games of the season, even when accounting for the time of year that it is, it's garbage time and all that. Like, the things that he's able to do, most of the guys who've got the ability to cut and read on offense, are an above average defender on defense, they don't have the type of athleticism that he has, right? Like there's something there. And if Caruso was drafted, we would be talking about him as prospect more than this cult hero figure that we hope is. But anyway,
no, I agree.
Yeah. So, but is this team going to be, is it going to look the same after the trade deadline? I think there are moves that need to be made. Like, I think they did a solid job this offseason, but there's still the hole at the guard spot at a lead guard, guy who can score off of a ball screen, and then that wing defender. So I'm hoping that we can fill at least one of those holes before the playoffs.
Yeah, either they have to fill that hole via personnel move, or like Kuzma has to take a step forward, right?
Right.
You know?
Or say Caruso takes a step forward too, right? Like, say he's like, hey, that's a legitimate borderline starter in the league. Well, hey, we're a different team at that point if something like that happens. So you're right. There could be that internal development too.
Last question here before we get out of here. Do you think Danny Green is good enough to be the third best player on a championship team? Because I think, like, right now, as it stands, before we see anything from DeMarcus Cousins, he's probably the team's third best player. Do you think he's good enough to be the third best player on a championship level team?
I do not.
I would like
him to be, and yeah, I'm sure there are people that are, you know, yelling at their speakers saying, well, Kuzma, right, or Boogie.
Yeah.
Green is an all around player, right? Green is a high end wing defender who's capable. He's a high end 3-and-D type of player. So in terms of helping you win games, this is why he's a, you know, 28-minute player per game on championship caliber teams.
Yeah.
Is because he's capable of contributing on both ends. Kuz has to be able to show that on the defensive end first, or he's got to be just so friggin' good on offense that it overrides that. But to me, ideally, Danny Green is a number four guy. That's why I'm so on the DeMarcus Cousins is really, really important for this team, because a healthy DeMarcus Cousins, we don't know exactly what that looks like post Achilles, he can be the third best player on a championship team.
Yeah,
and that slots Danny Green appropriately in the fourth or fifth type of spot. Kuzma becomes the fourth or fifth most important player, however you want to rank those guys, right? Then it starts like, oh, hey, this is a guy that can do what you're asking of him. If Boogie doesn't come back to, you know, 80%, 75% of what he was, then these questions like, you know, Danny Green's good, but is he third best player good? Probably not. Is Kyle Kuzma? Probably not. So he helps slot guys appropriately.
Yeah, that's why I asked that question. I think he's a high level fourth best player on a championship team. Like,
if
he's your fourth best player, he's a damn good fourth best player on a championship team. But, you know, if he's your third best player, he's, you know, you're probably looking at you know, either losing in the finals or losing in the conference finals. Mm-hmm. And now this isn't the typical year, I guess, is a fair counter to that analysis. It's so much more parity. There isn't as good, like, the championship contenders this year aren't nearly as good as they've been the last five or six years. So, you know, in that respect, maybe he is good enough to be a third best player, but I'd rather not risk it.
Right. And it's funny, you know, our job is to provide analysis and go into all of the details and whatnot. There is a non-zero chance, in fact, much higher than that, that LeBron James goes into God mode at some point. And all of this stuff doesn't matter all that much, especially in this type of year. He's not going to run into a just loaded Warriors team at the end of the season, right? Like, there is that more of a parity. So if LeBron makes, you know, if LeBron is able to tap into 2018 playoffs LeBron, right, or Anthony Davis is, you know, making an MVP type of run and carries that into the playoffs, both of which are not far-fetched ideas, the fringes matter, but this is why you sign superstars. This is why you trade everything, even if we disagreed with the amount that they did, is why you trade everything for superstar caliber players, is to make these types of conversations that we're having about Danny Green matter just a little bit less.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, I just double checked and Magic stopped listing things. I was going to go back to that well, but you know.
You were like, yeah, Pete. Yeah, shut up.
I was listening. I can listen to two things at once. Just not around my wife, it turns out. Like, Jen would. It's funny how
that works. I'm similar.
Jen would disagree vehemently with my assessment there, but I swear I can. This is fun, though. And look, Danny Green is he's just one of those signings that you look back on. You know, we've talked about everybody likes to list their favorite role players of all time. You know, Rick Fox joins the conversation in those spots. Robert Horry joins the conversation. Lamar Odom. You can go on down the line. We've already talked about Glenn Rice. If the Lakers win a championship here, Danny Green joins that kind of a conversation. And in an organization as historically blessed as the Lakers have been, if you're in that conversation with the Lakers, that puts you like he can chalk up another sizable contract after this one, I would imagine. So it's fun to think about. I just can't wait to watch, you know, a shooter of his caliber. The Lakers haven't had a shooter of his caliber in way too damn long. So it's nice that they've kind of modernized a little bit.
And yeah, and just the shooting of the roster in general that has taken a step. Like, I think they're an average shooting team from the outside this year. And
which is a huge step up.
Right. That's a huge step up in terms of talent, right? So even if they're the 15th most talented shooting group, having a guy like LeBron and Anthony Davis, that doesn't mean you finish 15th in three-point shooting, right? Like, those guys are enhancers. They turn average shooters into good shooters into great shooters into historic shooters.
Right.
So that is the type of bump. And just, again, we've said this many times, the roster just makes a lot more sense.
Yep, absolutely. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We are reaching that time of the year where Pete and I are going to maybe step back a little bit more. Pete, you're getting ready to take a vacation here for pretty soon, I would imagine, too. I'm going to, I guess, be a dad, which is something that I have to do at this point. So, you know, we might scale it back to, you know, somewhere closer to 3 or 4 shows per week at this stage. But, you know, so long as there's stuff to talk about, like Magic Johnson listing his top 60 places around the world to visit, then we'll hop on here and poke fun at that. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.